And you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. We go to Ireland and we go to Sean Mahan. Indeed, and we go to Sean Mahan, the actor. In his home place, the place that actually he was born in, bred and buttered, he has traveled throughout the world pretty much, spent a lot of time in the United States and L.A., in New York, and London, whatever. He for those, indeed, you may remember that he worked here in Broadway on two Broadway shows, Seafarer and 39 Steps. We've known him for quite a bit of time, and in fact, we had to get used to the idea that here's our Sean Mahan leaving and going back to Dublin, and we were rolling our eyes because we weren't too sure what's the matter with them. But you went over for a very good reason. First of all, Sean, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. Good to be here.
Okay, now, you came to the U.S. in your mid-20s.
I left at 24. I suppose my first entree to the U.S. was when I was 19. I was in college. I was in business, and I spent a summer on the J-1 visa in Cape Cod with a crazy gang of 10 other Irish people living in a house in Falmouth. And from there, I went over to California, and then the following year, the same gang of us went back to Hawaii and did working in restaurants and all that kind of stuff. And at that point, I knew that I'd probably move to the U.S. at some point. I didn't know how it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And just as I was finishing up college, I got the Donnelly visa. Mm-hmm. And I got a job at a bank in Ireland, and I was there for a few years, and I was just ready to re-spread my wings in Ireland. It was Ireland in the late 80s, early 90s, and there was no Celtic Tiger. It was wasn't a depressed mood, but the economy certainly wasn't, vibrant.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of things to do.
The tiger hadn't arisen yet.
It hadn't arisen at all, and there was no even talk of it at all. And so I ended up getting a job with Bord Bonya, to go launch their Kerrygold cheeses in the U.S. as director of marketing. So
one of the largest exporters from Ireland, and a very significant one.
Yeah, it was, and it was an amazing opportunity. And they sent me out to Chicago, and I was there for 2.5 years. And I got to travel around and see every part of the States. And I was in the food distribution and import business. And I really got to, know myself. And from there, I got a job at Avonmore Foods, which is another Irish company.
Right.
And they bought a cheese distribution company in Wisconsin. And I went up there. And then that was into my late 20s. Mm-hmm. And I fulfilled myself in many ways from a business perspective and travel-wise. There was a part of me that was yearning to, I guess, explore the more spiritual, artistic side of myself. And at that point, I decided to become an actor. So I quit business back to Chicago. And
that must have been an interesting telephone call or letter home.
I think it's interesting that you say that, and it's interesting that you can actually appreciate the fact that there was a telephone conversation or a conversation at all, because some people probably wouldn't even, ask. But yes, it certainly was a conversation that I sat down, I had with my mom and dad at the time. And I think the truth is, I'd always wanted to be in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity didn't really exist for me at that time. In Ireland, I didn't even know there was such a thing as drama schools or people really became actors. It just wasn't a notion. So it was about get a job, fulfill yourself, fulfill your functions, and, take care of duty.
Was there emphasis for you at that time, where you looked at between the eyes and said, you have security, you have a high level of management skills, what the hell are you doing?
There was a lot of that. It's interesting. If I had stayed in Ireland, I never would have made the move. I never would have made the move professionally, should I say.
Yeah.
It was only when I went to the States, and I remember sitting around, I remember very clearly, I was in Chicago, sitting around a table with a bunch of American friends that I had just made, and we were talking about dreams and aspirations and what have you, and I talked about wanting to be an actor, and I said, but that just wouldn't happen. And they all just kind of stopped and looked at me and said, why not? And for the first time, I asked myself the question, I guess, why not? And it was really that American kind of philosophy of you can do what you want,
mm-hmm.
that encouraged me to, you know, and even, funny enough, my boss in Avonmore, he was an American guy,
mm-hmm.
and the company got bought out by a conglomerate, and that's why everybody was leaving. He said to me, he said, Sean, you got different things to do. He said, this isn't your path. You should do something else. And I had kind of done everything I'd been asked to do from a family perspective. And when I said to my mom and my dad, I'm doing this, and to certain friends, they're like, well, you know, you've done what we asked you to do. Now do what you want to do.
Yeah.
So that was it. And,
well, in hindsight, you got off light.
So again?
In hindsight, I say you got off very light.
Very, very light. I did indeed, yeah.
But again, I suppose for you know, parents and family, they knew that if this turned out to be, you know, an error in judgment or whatever, you could always fall back. And in fact, that option, you know, was there. It's a little bit different, I would imagine, that if you were younger and, you know, in teenage years in a society that was struggling already, you know, any hint of, well, in my time, I keep forgetting we have there's almost a generation in difference here in our ages. But in my time, if that would have been interpreted as saying, isn't that fantastic? And to think that you can work that around your day job. Nobody would ever imagine, except for perhaps those in an inner circle, say in Dublin, maybe Cork, maybe Belfast, but at that time it was, that's great. You know, you want to be a musician, you want to be, you know, fabulous, as long as you don't give up the day job. It wasn't perceived that this was actually a career. Something
well, that's exactly right, and that's what was imparted to me, and it was, that's wonderful as a hobby. And
yeah.
For me, it was like, it's, you know, well, you know, it just didn't, I didn't want it to be that. And
yeah.
You know, it still stands to reason sometimes that, I guess, when it's not a hobby, you work
yeah.
hard, yeah, and the commitment to it is harder. But
well, you know, isn't it the old cliche, though? Find something that you really like to do, and then figure out how it's going to keep the bread on the table. It is something.
It's interesting, though, because something like that, when you do make a change towards something that you love, if it's music or writing or performing or whatever it is, it goes through, for me, I think it's gone through many cycles, and there comes a point at which the joy and the reason you did it in the first place can change, and when it becomes a profession and a source of income,
right,
it can get contorted, and you can lose the reason that you did it in the first place. So you have to really find that.
Yeah. Now, okay, so now, and it wasn't like you were a child actor. I mean, this was a fairly big decision for you to make, considering now, you know, many would have felt that by this time you should, you know, begun to enjoy the fruits of a well-established career. Maybe I'm dwelling on this too much, but you weren't the new kid on the block. You were
certainly not.
Yeah,
certainly not. And it's interesting because people, you know, when I even for me it wasn't an option. So I never looked at it other than through my own lens. But when people hear the story, they're like, well, that's a great story because you really changed your life. I mean, I was 33 when I moved out to Los Angeles, and
yeah.
30 when I quit the job, and I did some training in Chicago, and worked in a lot of theater in Chicago. But it was, I think there was this crazy sense of adventure. The thing that got me out of Ireland in the first place is the same thing. It's this myopic point of view in terms of what's life about and what's it all about, and age or the fruits of your investment from before, that was never an issue. And still
yeah.
kind of not an issue. I don't see the world that way. But other people do. And that can restrict people from taking risks or doing or making changes.
Yeah. And some people spend so much time thinking about it that actually, in hindsight, you can look back and say, God, that was a time waste that I should have gone for it or something. Because when you make a decision like that and that big, if you're going to put that out to a committee, chances are, you know, if you're looking for overall approval, isn't going to happen anyway.
Well, so you can't. I mean, you can't look for validation. And the crazy thing is that, you know, you want to leap and know that the net is there to catch you, but the real way that it happens is that you leap knowing that there is no net, and the net appears in some kind of shape or form later on.
Okay, so now you start. Now you are an actor and looking over your current resume. From a fledging actor to working with Oscar and Tony nominated directors and actors and, you know, working on Broadway. Was that a small jump, or how long did it take roughly to get from square one to where now, and the reason we're having you, one of the reasons we're having you on today, is because now you are playing a leading role in Philomena. Philomena, the film that it was filmed in Ireland, the UK, in Washington, D.C., and you'll tell us about that in a moment. But how did you manage to wiggle your way to into the top shelf?
Wiggle is a good word. You know, I think you take tiny steps, incremental steps, and all of a sudden you look behind and you've made huge leaps and bounds. Probably it's taken me like 10 to 13 years to kind of get any element of real traction going. But, you know, that's necessary in order to emotionally prepare yourself and get yourself to a place where it all makes sense.
And you'll have to admit that that's a relatively short period of time if you're late getting out the gate.
Yes, probably. It is. I mean, I was in Chicago and I had, you know, big dreams and big ambitions. I moved out to Los Angeles, and Los Angeles didn't prove to have the level of what I thought I wanted in terms of notoriety or success. However, it laid a lot of the groundwork for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned 40 in Los Angeles and began to question whether I wanted to live there. You know, it's a great place if you want to be in the business.
Right.
And you have to really enjoy living there as well, because it has, you know, it's very, very different from Ireland and anything that I'd known. And the older I got, the more further I began to feel I was moving away from who I was, who I fundamentally was. So I kind of asked myself the question, where do I want to be? And the answer was Ireland, the UK, or New York. Because New York has such a strong Irish presence and has such a strong affiliation and feels European and all those things. And so I made some tentative moves in that direction, and I'd signed in with a small agent in New York that I got through my Los Angeles agent, and actually I was let go. My LA agent fired me, saying it was over. You know, time is done. You're up. And I was like, okay, I guess I better make some kind of decisions here. And I got a call from my New York agent saying, there's a show coming in to New York. Would you audition for it? And I said, well, maybe I should just go out anyway and audition, just since I'm going to be in that market. And that was The Seafarer. And I flew out on a Monday. I auditioned on a Tuesday, called back Wednesday, called back Thursday. By Friday, I got a phone call saying, you want to come to New York and do this Broadway show with, you know, these titans of industry. And then That started 3 years of me out of the gate, just moving at a tremendous speed. And it was like me catapulted into the stratosphere, to be honest.
Right. And from Seafarer, 39 Steps, just want to ask you, though, that when you are with the titans of the industry, as you have correctly labeled them. How do very seasoned actors, how do they gel or respond to not just one or two, but to a whole slew of actors who are, you know, coming into their realm, into their field? What's the reaction? And is it the same in each place you go?
Honestly, it was a very generous and very supportive environment. I mean, my greatest enemy was myself and my insecurities around it. That would have been the hardest part, is to overcome whatever questions I would have about my own ability. They themselves was the great thing about America, in a way, is that if you're the right person for the job, you get the job. And they'll fit you in if you fit the equation. Other places I've worked, it's less about that and more about who you know, mm-hmm. how long you've been doing it and earning your stripes. And there's a place for that as well. I mean, I don't discount where that fits in the equation of things, but certainly in getting to New York and being around these producers and directors and actors, they welcomed me with open arms.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's helpful.
It was tremendous. It really was.
Okay. When you get into the league of Oscars and, you know, Tony nominated directors and actors, that's yet another step into even a narrower field.
Mm-hmm.
When you arrive there, do you say, this is it? I can't go much further than this. And is there a part of you that says, geez, I hope I don't slip backwards after this run? Is that something that's real, or is that to fit into the insecurity aspect issues?
I think there's always an idea. Well, for me, it's kind of the Wizard of Oz. When you pull the curtain back and realize that everybody's human and that everybody has insecurities, and everybody, no matter who they are, where you are, and then they work themselves to a position where you look at them and laud them. But everybody is a person. And once you can realize that there's no real velvet rope and there's no real private club, and mm-hmm. even when you enter the private club, you realize, oh, God, it doesn't feel any different than when I was outside, then you begin to feel like, oh, you belong, and people just become people. You know, and there's a difference between, in my experience, there's a difference between people of, we're talking about caliber at the moment in terms of ability, Oscars and Tonys and all that kind of stuff, just to put labels on things. There's a difference between that and people who have star quality. Stars themselves are a very different type of thing, and you can be around them and feel very, very, I don't know, you can feel like you stand in the shadows mm-hmm. around people who have such star power compared to people who are just great at what they do and have been given accolades because of it.
Any reservations, though, about, say, you're in New York and obviously that was, something that I wouldn't say fell into your lap, but you're in New York, and you see that there are a lot of opportunities there. Is it coincidental that then you wound up in London, which is equally attractive and where the opportunities are at least for many in that field, as plentiful as they are in New York?
It's a very good question. I think it all came tumbling together at the same time. I mean, New York certainly, it was a very good time for me, and New York was really, really good to me. And there was the plays happening, there was movies happening, there was TV stuff happening, there was all that kind of thing. And I began to get caught up in the machine of it in my head in terms of what's next, as opposed to the enjoyment of it. After a while, it became a little bit exhausting. And at the same time, there was another factor. You know, when I was doing The Seafarer, I was working with Jim Norton, Colin Hill, Kieran Hines, mm-hmm. David Morse. They all live around the world and travel to where they go to work. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would be interesting to be able to live where you want to live and then be travel to where you want to go work. And they'd all spent time in London. They all had strong pedigree. And then from there, I went to 39 Steps, which was another show that originated in London. And I got a London agent out of those two shows. And mm-hmm. they began to, you know, I began to feel the pull of going back closer to home.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect to have that. That's not something that was ever on the radar at all. I just thought I'd keep on going and that'll be it. But all of a sudden, something inside just began to click and tick. And I was like, I, for some reason, felt like I was losing a bit of my identity. I felt that I lost part of myself, and I want to go back closer to that. So that drove a large part of the reason why I left New York.
Okay. Philomena, which we haven't heard that much of here, but there's hardly a person in Ireland, and indeed for that matter in London, who hasn't recognized that this new movie, Philomena, is a must-see. And for those few people who I know who have actually seen the movie, there are about as many different opinions with respect to it. First of all, what is Philomena? What is it about, and how Irish is it?
It's completely and fundamentally Irish. It's based on a book written by a BBC reporter, an ex-BBC reporter named Martin Sixsmith. Martin Sixsmith was quasi-employed by a woman, a 70-year-old woman, to find her child, who she had lost at the age of 15 or 16. And she was an Irish woman from Limerick who, at a very young age, became pregnant. Her mother had died and never explained the facts of life. She'd had a one-night stand with a boy and didn't even know what sex was, and she got pregnant. The father disowned her, sent her to the Magdalen homes. And at that time, there was an arrangement between the church, or these particular Magdalen sisters, and the U.S., where for £1,000, and if you were Catholic, you come and buy babies.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these girls who went into these particular laundries had to sign over the right of the child to the nuns, and the nuns then sold them on. So this particular woman, Philomena Lee is her name, unbeknownst to her, she didn't know what was going to happen. Her child was sold, and at 16 or 17 or 18, she left the home. She became a psychiatric nurse. She moved to London. She got married. She had her own family. And at 70, when her child would have been 50, she began to question whatever happened to him. And she teamed up with Martin Sixsmith, and the book, which subsequently is the basis for the movie and the screenplay, is the result of that journey.
It's a true story.
True story, fundamentally, yeah.
And, true enough so that it's from what I hear, and I haven't seen it yet, but it would be a story that has, up until this point at least anyway, might fit into, the reality of stories that have come from, mostly from Ireland, Ireland and England, about the unwanted children, the woman, the mother who is in fact the real victim, of fathers, whether they're around or not, seem to get off lightly with that. But here is a woman who sinned, and a woman who really now has become a burden on society. And we hear a lot of very negative stuff about not only the sisters, but also the clergy and the institutional homes in Ireland. And it's been around, and many times we wonder, how exaggerated it is, except that if you talk to somebody who has actually belonged in that area, you can change your mind very quickly, because you say, God, you can't make this stuff up.
You can't. And, I spent quite a bit of time with Philomena herself, the real Philomena. And of course, the book was the book. It was adapted to a screenplay by Steve Coogan and a Jeff Pope, I believe his writing partner was, there are some devices that they use in order to for the dramatic content
right.
of the story, but fundamentally the facts are all correct. And it's interesting, when I flew in, I'm over in Ireland at the moment doing a bit of work, and just as I was, I guess, coming in from the airport, actually on the radio, I was listening to this big debate on RTE radio about this whole thing, and the number of people calling in who were in similar situations. And then afterwards, 2 days later, I was down in the local pub having a cup of coffee with a friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
and the table next door was in heated debate about it as well. So it's everywhere. And the story is, the Magdalene Sisters is a movie that was out, I think around 10 years ago, and that has a much harder angle and mm-hmm. less hopeful and less redemptive quality to it. This particular story, the way it's told, injects a tremendous amount of humor and humanity.
Right.
And does question the element of lost religion and forgiveness. And it's a tremendous piece in terms of that, you know, it's based in truth.
Is there an element of what is considered to be quite popular over the last decade of Catholic bashing?
Well, so Steve Coogan wrote it, and he is his parents are from Ireland. And I was at a screening in Ireland of the film, and he did a Q&A afterwards. And he was very careful not to Catholic bash at
mm-hmm.
all. So a lot of the information is presented from a factual standpoint, and everything else is personal interpretation by the characters. And in a way, he represents, you know, he's an atheist, his character is, and Philomena's character, played by Judi Dench, is a Catholic,
uh-huh.
who, you know, at some point questioned her religion, and at some point had a very hard time with it,
mm-hmm.
and then came back to her belief in God and forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, what I find good about this is that it does put both sides on the table, and I think it is, it leaves the audience asking the question.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fair.
Do the sisters, do the nuns, do the orphanage, how do they come out of this in the end? Or is that, that for the individual to?
I think there is an element of, there is a sister, her name is Sister Hildegard, who is the actual sister who is dealing with some of these things. You know, she is represented in a quite, she does typify a very cold, firm type of presence within the film. And again, you know, if that's for dramatic content, possibly. But when I was here, as I said 2 weeks ago, listening to the radio, there were some people calling into the radio show having had experience with Sister Hildegard. One person said that she was very nice. 4 or 5 people called in saying that she was exactly as how she was depicted in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, there's some very nice nuns, and there's some firmer of the old, harder, mm-hmm. based upon, you know, I guess the time. Times were different then,
mm-hmm.
and how the part religion played in terms of having, you know, it had a very strict moral code and viewed people who were sinners in a very strict way.
Yeah.
So as a result, they felt very justified in the behavior, because this was what was being taught to them by their leaders and what the church believed.
Yeah.
So they felt vindicated.
Yeah. I think something as international as this seems that, and the story or the movie Philomena is, you know, is destined for a tremendous international showing. It might be, if you start off by saying that the nuns in Ireland were, you know, selling children for, you know, if you had £1,000 or whatever, that just some will say, wow, we didn't hear that one before.
Mm-hmm.
How factual is that particular aspect of it? And where did the number come from?
That's completely factual. Well, it's based upon the book.
Yeah.
Smith did his research. There was an arrangement even with the government regarding passports, how to get the kids out. So there is, it's based in fact.
Right. Just so we can get past that, or maybe not we, so that I can get past that, was there as if you were buying a pup, was the runt of the litter half price discounted? Do we know?
Well, what's interesting about the, I don't know the answer specifically in terms of runts of litter or what have you, but in this particular situation with Philomena, the family that came, that ended up adopting her child was Anthony and later called Michael.
Uh-huh.
They actually came and were looking for a little girl, and they were adopting a little child. Her name was Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony was really great friends with Mary, and he wouldn't let her go. And the family said, oh, well, let's just take him as well. So they ended up taking two at the same time when they only wanted the one.
Without giving the story away, this was indeed somebody who was very high-profile American.
Yeah.
Can you just tell us that, say, without giving the story completely away? Who are we talking about?
The character, the book itself is, the movie's based on a book called The Lost Child of Philomena Lee, and the book itself focuses primarily on the character, the boy who was taken. Whereas the movie is more about the journey of Philomena and Martin Sixsmith. The character, the boy himself, was raised in Illinois, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Went to Notre Dame and rose up through the. He was a lawyer and rose up through the ranks in both the Reagan and Bush administration, and had achieved notoriety primarily around the whole aspect of gerrymandering and districting and what have you, and just kept on getting massive promotions. But for a number of reasons, and I won't give them away,
mm-hmm.
as long as like the plot, there was partly the whole adoption thing and his relationship with his father. There was a lot of self-hate and self and insecurity, and that permeated his personal life. And he ended up being personally quite destructive. So while he was very successful professionally, personally, he was kind of a mess.
Now, that character actually represents Philomena's brother.
Her son.
I'm sorry, her son. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We just want to again say, what is the movie itself? What are the reactions to it? I mean, it's critically acclaimed, but mm-hmm. what category does it fit into? A drama / comedy? You mentioned that there's humor.
I think it's a bittersweet dramedy in a way.
Okay.
I think if you probably just read the newspapers that it had a PG rating over here. However, it was being fought against the censors over in the U.S., and it just won its rating. The Weinstein Company just won its rating as a PG rating over in the U.S. now.
Yeah.
So it has a huge sense of comic relief to it, but with massive undertones of truth and question.
Now, this would be kind of unplanned, a new welcome kind of career change for you, in that actually one doesn't go from LA to New York to London so you can get back to Dublin. This one kind of, there's chicken and the egg here.
True.
You found yourself not only in Dublin, but you found yourself at home. And you found yourself at home in your parents' house and in the house you grew up in.
And you mean specifically now, moving away from the whole Philomena concept and just my journey in general?
Yeah.
Yes, I guess there's an irony and a serendipity to everything. And I think the serendipity is the greatest part. I kind of chuckle to myself. You know, I moved to London to get closer to home. uh-huh. but I wasn't able to make the big leap back to Dublin because it just felt like too much of a leap.
Mm-hmm.
I was able professionally to do quite a few movies in London, and then mm-hmm. Philomena came along, and what was great about Philomena was that we ended up shooting in the U.S., U.K., and in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
all places where, you know, I personally had lived, and they kind of represented kind of the same, the locations represented my life. And when it was over, I began to ask myself questions again in terms of, okay, so I live in London now, why? After, you know, if I'm going to be close to home, why not be closer to home? So I actually last September, I closed up shop in the UK and made the decision to move back to New York and to travel between New York and Dublin.
Uh-huh.
And so that happened. And a week after that happened, I got a part in a film that's currently shooting in Ireland, and that has kind of opened up the world for me here to have a presence in Dublin. And I was hired as a local actor because I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I shoot in Dublin close to my family home in Howth and down in Powerscourt. And I'm staying in the house I grew up in. So I left at 24, and many years later here I am back in my old bedroom, looking out the same window. Happy to be here. The same window I looked out at when I was a kid, desperately trying to get away. So there's a full circle moment for sure.
There are two stories there for the price of one.
Yes.
Philomena, which incidentally, friends, it is going to. Did I see somewhere that it opens in a few theaters next Friday, November 22nd, and then the following week. It will be then into general distribution. Well, that's one story. And your own story with respect to doing the full circle,
mm-hmm.
And being back in the same bedroom that you were born and raised in is yet another story. Can you see yourself being there 5 years from now? Can you see yourself? I know that maintaining a home in New York and there, that's a given. But could you see yourself collecting the old age pension in your room, in your house?
No, I don't see that at all. No, I think this is a very choice, special moment in time. I think once my mom leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Then it'll be time for me to leave this particular house and in a very full, healthy, complete way. It's just, you know, because if I had to leave without having come back and really made peace with everything,
mm-hmm.
it would still be something that would stick in my craw. But now it feels as if everything has just worked itself out, and all the questions and insecurities and everything that drove me in the first place,
mm-hmm.
That's been answered. So I do know for sure that I want a home in Dublin,
mm-hmm.
and I want a home in the U.S. I lived half my life in the U.S. I lived half my life in Ireland. I am quite Irish American, and to go between the two feels right.
You have the best of both worlds, indeed.
Yes.
My guest friend is Sean Mahan, and he again plays. There are a few lead roles in this one, but. Those who have reported back to us said you've got the choice lead role in there. And you're also, now that that Philomena is out in general distribution, you're now in Ireland and you're working on another film. That's the one that you had auditioned for way back when.
Well, I was actually, funny, I was at the premiere. I was in New York. I just moved back, and I flew back for the premiere of Philomena in London at the
mm-hmm.
same time. My agent had set up a meeting for me to audition for an Irish film. I went and did that and thought nothing more of it. And I ended up getting the film, and it's an Irish-Dutch co-production.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family adventure movie that's been shot here, and it's got some great Irish actors and some like great English actors, and it's going to be something I think that'll appeal to the American and to the Irish audiences. It's about, you know, a small town in Ireland. An American family comes back, and the town itself is haunted, and the young girl has to figure out what the whole story is. And I play the Earl of a particular estate that's set in the modern day, and all the antics that happen to that. So it's quite fantastic.
Good, good. Now, again, for the benefit of those who indeed may not have heard much about Philomena, it's real. It's coming our way, and actually, it's a Weinstein, isn't it? That Harvey Weinstein and the brother Bob, an independent American film studio, which is actually here in New York, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the biggest news stories pertaining to Philomena is that it was. Initially flagged as an R rating and an R rated movie here, and that has been reversed. So as a PG-13 film, which has taken the Ireland and the UK by storm, we can expect that it will have great shelf life here as well.
I think it will. I think watch out.
Watch out for Philomena. And indeed, friends, I am again delighted to welcome today Sean Mahan, and wish you continued success. If you just keep Sean, if you just keep doing what you're doing, you don't have to add anything else down to it. You know.
Well, I kind of keep on saying my life, everything after this point is gravy. You know, I have the meat and potatoes. It's all done. Everything is just gravy.
Good for you. Okay, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, friends.
The story as told by himself, Sean Mahan, who has indeed a very interesting story, and the movie again. I don't have to tell you too much about it, other than because we're going to see a lot of it. It's a real story. It's an Irish story, and we're looking forward to it coming our way, and we can make judgment ourselves. And you are, friends, listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.